Sometimes it's just as easy as just putting yourself out there and being like, hi, I can do that. And I think it's so much easier now to do that because of the access people have via Instagram and the internet and LinkedIn and just people, so many people have websites, you can just write to people directly.
You're listening to the Ink and Paint Folk podcast, a look at animation through the women and non-binary folk who make it. I'm your host, Cassie Soliday. Today's guest is stop-motion animator and producer Eileen Kohlhepp. Eileen has been working since the 90s on cult classics like Daria, Celebrity Deathmatch, Robot Chicken, and the list continues to grow today. Animation is already a niche corner of the entertainment industry, but stop-motion is an even more tight-knit community. Eileen shares what it's been like to navigate such a specific industry over the years, gives us insight on how she pivots between animating and producing, and talks about how being an animator makes her a better producer. So grab a beverage of your choice, sketch while you listen if you like, and enjoy.
Hi, my name is Eileen Kohlhepp. I'm a stop motion animator and a producer, and I've been involved in the industry for almost 25 years now. I've worked in television, features, commercials, music videos, independent short films, anything that requires animation, pretty much. I think what I really love about animation is the process of actually creating animation. Sometimes I enjoy that even more than the finished final piece of animation, but it's just everything that happens from start to finish, all everything that it required is required to create animation is really exciting to me. And seeing how basically how the sausage is made is something that's always been really exciting.
Mm-hmm. Like as a kid, how did you know that appealed to you? Because like we only see the finished products on screen.
Well, I think for me, that's also kind of developed over a long period of time of me being involved in it. I think, when you start off kind of understanding how animation is made, or like going from really loving cartoons as a kid to understanding that there's actually people behind it creating those characters, your experience with animation changes over time. So I think for me, what brings me joy now is the process. I think what brought me joy in the past was seeing these beautiful drawings and dimensional objects come to life. And that felt like magic to me. I think now also when I say process, I kind of feel like animation is this art form that's endlessly adaptable, and every path and technique that you take to communicate a story or a message is different. It can, every interpretation, every time someone approaches a film or a short or a television show, they are trying to come up with a different way to do something than it's ever been done before. And I feel like they're constant animators and people who work in the field are constantly trying to improve upon what they've done in the past or do things visually in a different way than it's been done. And that's something I really enjoy about the working in animation.
Yeah. I feel like in college, we were always talking about all of our heroes and all of our favorite sequences. And now that like I'm working in the industry, I'm always like, have you seen what this colleague or this peer has been doing? And it's really exciting to be able to what you're saying, bring the history of what's been done before, as well as like what people are doing around you now, to just kind of keep you excited and to be here and making new things. So I love that.
Yeah.
So while we're talking about childhood as well, like where are you from? Like, can you tell us a bit about like what movie was it that got you into this, or what scene made you want to animate? Like what inspired you to pursue animation?
Well, so I was born in Philadelphia, oldest of four. I grew up with a lot of, I was born in the mid-70s, so I came up in a time where I was fed a steady diet of Sesame Street, the Muppets, Looney Tunes, Disney. The first animated film I saw in a theater was Sleeping Beauty, in and that was like mind-blowing. But from a really young age, I used to spend a lot of time drawing. And my parents, especially my dad, were really encouraging. And, my dad used to sit and watch the Muppet Show with me, and we would draw the Muppets. And he said, he told me years later, he's like, "The way I knew you were really good is because you could draw everything so much better than I could, and you were four." And so we had a, my parents both loved television and film, and we were a big TV household. We were not that house in the 80s where the kids were not allowed to watch television. And we moved to the suburbs in the early 80s and had cable TV, which was pretty rare at the time. So I watched a lot of MTV and Nickelodeon and HBO, and I got to see all of these incredible music videos, and there was all this experimental animation, like the Aha music video, the opening sequence. There's a stop motion, like motion control shot that was at the opening of every HBO movie. That is just really cool. That was, something that really stood out to me. The Secret of NIMH, The Last Unicorn. I mean, there's just like a ton of stuff that I, the Disney Channel played all the old Mickey and Donald cartoons every morning. There was just tons of stuff visually to see that was like all different techniques and kinds of animation that really I feel like subconsciously, as I got older and was drawing more and being exposed to more art and trying to figure out what I was going to do with this talent that I had and how I was going to make a living. Because, as you start to get older, people are like, "Oh, you should do this and you should do that." And I didn't really know what I wanted to do. With, I knew I liked to draw, I knew I liked to paint, but I didn't really know what I was going to do with it. One day I was sitting in the waiting room at my orthodontist. This is in 1989, and there was a People magazine that I was flipping through, and there was an article about the new Disney movie that was coming out called The Little Mermaid. And the article had an interview with one of the animators, Glenn Keane, and there were pictures of his raw pencil drawings of Ariel. And I was like, wow. I mean, Glenn Keane's work. His work is stunning. It's so incredibly beautiful. And for me as a kid, I was like, wow, I can draw for a living. And if I can go to work all day and draw. And that just sounded like a great thing. And I, being the nerd that I was, I spent all of my time doing research at the library and looking through old magazines and microfiche and finding out any information I could get about people who made animation for a living and if this was something that I could do. And there was a comic shop near us that sold books and comics, and I found a copy of The Illusion of Life there. I also found this other book called How to Create Animation, which came out in 1990, which was all interviews with animation professionals and how they got into the industry and their day-to-day experiences. And it was like actually very similar to like what you do in your show, where you're asking people how they got to where they are, what they do on a daily basis, what they've worked on, what their experiences are. And some of the interviews in that book are really kind of hilariously brutally honest. Like just a little bit of shit talking about Disney and Bluth and all these other things. And it was but that was kind of my Bible, because it had a description of like the whole process of what people did, what all the different jobs were. In the back of it had a list of schools that taught animation, and it was a great resource at a time pre-internet where there was no information. So I kind of used all of those things that I found and spent most of my high school studying, you know, life drawing, all of the things that, you know, anytime there was an animation class down at University of the Arts in Philadelphia, near where I lived, I would sign up for that class if it was open to high schoolers, try to do that, try to do as much life drawing as possible, build up my skills so that I could get into an art school that had a good animation program. And so I was really determined. I was like one of the few kids in school who was like, I know exactly what I want to do, and this is what I need to do it, and this is where I need to go, and in order to do it, I need these things. And I think I really scared the guidance counselor at my Catholic high school, because she was really, really didn't think it was a good idea that I was only applying to art schools, and felt like I should apply to some liberal arts school as a backup in case this animation thing didn't work out. Because, you know, it was the early 90s, and it wasn't like it is today. I feel like today there are so many more opportunities and so many more schools and so many more resources for people who want to get into this. And at the time when I decided I wanted to work in animation, that was not the, it wasn't the case. So, but I was really lucky. I worked really hard. I put together a great portfolio, and I got into a bunch of different art schools, and I eventually decided to go to RISD, and I'm really glad I did.
That's awesome. And RISD is the Rhode Island School of Design?
Yes. Sorry, Rhode Island School of Design.
Just in case anyone's currently researching schools.
Yeah. And the thing that, you know, I started at RISD in the fall of 1993, which was also the same fall that Nightmare Before Christmas came out and The Wrong Trousers came out. And there was this influx of stop motion animation projects that appeared on the scene at that time. And I think I also was like surrounded by all of these other students who were super, you know, I was just meeting people who were more like me. And not that there weren't a lot of people who were interested in the things I was interested in the suburbs of Philadelphia at an all-girls Catholic school. So when I started at RISD, I was meeting all of these people who were really interested in animation and film and art, and they were sharing all of the things that they had found, and people would have things on VHS, and like you'd watch things in class, but you'd also go to the midnight movies at the Art House Theater down the street in Providence. And I just got exposed to all of this stuff that I had never seen before. And my sophomore year, the way RISD's program works is everybody has the first year. It's an intensive. You take drawing, you take 2D design, you take 3D design, you take art history. And so no one's in a major until they get to their sophomore year. And I think the reason they do that is so that everyone can get a really well-rounded education. And for a lot of people, they decide to do something completely different. But I still wanted to do animation and illustration. So my sophomore year, my animation professor was this woman, Yvonne Anderson, and she's really an incredible like independent animator. And just a wonderful teacher, really like kind of non-judgmental and open. And she would always show different films at the start of every class. And one of the films that she showed was Yuri Trinka's The Hand, which was and still is my favorite animated film of all time. And I think the confluence of Nightmare Before Christmas, Nick Park's The Wrong Trousers, Yuri Trinka's The Hand, seeing the Brothers Quay, there was music videos Fred Sturr did for Tool. There were all of these different things that I was like, I really enjoy this form of animation. Like, I like being able to create like that you're creating this whole world. You're creating puppets, you're building things. It's like live action, but it's not live action. It's more of a controlled environment. And when I was able to take Yvonne's stop motion class, she had gone to the Czech Republic and had brought back all of these ball and socket armatures that she allowed some of the students to use in their projects. So I got to use one of those armatures, and it was just so much fun to make this film. And I made this little film my sophomore year, and that's the film that helped me get my first stop motion job at MTV on Celebrity Deathmatch.
That's awesome. Sheesh. It's your sophomore project. That's so cool.
Well, yeah, I mean, I did more animation at RISD that was like, you know, some 2D stuff and some other things that were more experimental, but I didn't finish my senior thesis as an animated film. I finished it through the illustration department because I also was really interested in photography, and I was interested in other things as well. And I felt that if I actually finished a film, I didn't have a film in me to do a senior project. Like, I didn't feel like I had something that had to get out there, that I wanted to spend $10,000 of my money making to get out there. And so part of me was like, you know what, why don't I spend my last year focusing on learning all these other different skills? I already know I can animate. And if I want to animate, I can get out there and I'm going to learn on the job. I don't want to be a director and a filmmaker per se. So for me, I just was like, I'm going to focus on learning photography and lighting techniques. I'm going to focus on all of these other things and whatever classes I could take. And I was taking acting classes, and I was taking, you know, a lot of stuff in the photo department. I was still doing a ton of drawing and painting in the illustration department. And for me, that, you know, everyone else I knew focused on making a film, and I focused on something different. So, and I think I still was able to come out of school with everything I needed in order to work in the industry, even though I didn't have a like final senior project, like a lot of other people who come out of colleges have.
Mm-hmm. I love that you followed your gut and you did what you felt you weren't pressured into doing what they were required, like asking students to do.
Yeah, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy.
Teachers are like, this is how it's done. You'll never make it out in the real world. But you do, and you're doing fine.
Well, what was actually kind of interesting is at the time at RISD, there was more of a push for, you know, RISD has a very experimental animation program, and I think it's changed a little bit probably over the years, but it was really focused on making art films and experimental animation films. And there was some of the people there were really kind of anti-industry. And there was a pushback from some of the students when I was there that were like, look, we can do experimental films, but it also would be nice to know, learn techniques and how to actually animate. You know, it's one thing to learn how to like edit your film on the Steenback and splice together film. It's another thing to actually have some tangible skills and learn how to do these things. So I think I had struggled a little bit during my junior year with our professor, and had tried to make a stop motion film and got a lot of pushback. And part of this was in the 90s, we didn't have digital technology. Everything was being shot on film with Bolexes. They didn't have space. They didn't have the same lights. The facilities weren't as available. I think if I was making a film now at RISD with the accessibility to digital cameras, Dragon Frame, being able to shoot everything in my own apartment, probably in my own space, it would be a completely different story. I think in the 90s, it was really hard to make anything that was stop motion. And that's changed so much. And I think it's like why we have so many more people now working in stop motion who are just so good so quickly. There's like people who are, you know, learning how to animate Legos as a 9-year-old on their phone. And by the time they're a teenager, they have the skill level that someone who was coming out of school in the 90s has. So, I mean, it's just the accessibility to this technology in order to make things is so different now than it was 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. So you had mentioned that your sophomore project had gotten you onto Celebrity Deathmatch in RISD's in Rhode Island, and Celebrity Deathmatch was made in New York. So that's really cool, because I don't know if it was the same in the 90s, but it doesn't seem like there's too much outside of maybe preschool in terms of animation happening in New York. In Blue Sky, you know, RIP.
But yeah.
yeah. But just to kind of go over your highlight reel real quick, since then, you've worked on, you know, some amazing film and TV projects over the years, like Daria, Robot Chicken, Tumbleleaf, Anomalisa, tons of shorts like Mermaids on Mars, music videos, commercials, sequences of live action things like From Youth and Revolt and Community. And of course, you know, the classic stop motion special, Elf Buddies Christmas special. And like, that's like, of course, I said music videos, commercials, but there's a lot of them, and it barely scrapes the surface of what you've done in your, like, almost like 25 years altogether. So, like, what has been your favorite thing? Well, you kind of already said this about the process, so I'm not gonna. It was your favorite thing about working in animation and doing the work you do. Do you have a different answer for that than you did about, like, seeing how the sausage is made from earlier, or is it kind of the same?
I think over the years, you know, it's like, I've been really fortunate that like my career path has gone through all these different things. I think there's some people that get into the industry and they're working in television and television only, or they get into feature, or they maybe do some television and then they hop into features and they stay in features for a long time. Part of my career path was based on where I wanted to be, where I wanted to live. And when I first graduated, I actually moved to Los Angeles in 97, and I worked in doing photography and motion graphics. But I really hated Los Angeles. I hated Los Angeles, and I didn't want to stay out here. So at the end of 98, or the summer of 98, I moved back to the East Coast, and I moved to New York City. And it took me a good year of, you know, trying to break into getting into Nickelodeon or MTV. I was like sending my resume, doing tests, sending things in. A lot of times jobs weren't available. You'd do a test and they're like, that's great, we'll hold on to it until we actually have a project. But, work wasn't as prevalent. They weren't hiring as much. So I spent my first year in New York working temp jobs, working, you know, assisting for weddings, doing whatever work I could do, until it was April of 99. One of my good friends from RISD, this guy, Dan Driscoll, he had gotten a job as an animator on Celebrity Deathmatch from the first season. And so he was working, and he was like, they're looking for people, because at the time there was another job that was happening in Portland, Oregon at Will Vinton. There was a project called the PJs and another project called Gary and Mike, and they were crewing up and needed as many stop motion animators as possible. So all of the New York crew basically mass exodus. They like just all left, like everybody left. There was a mass exodus from Celebrity Deathmatch, and everybody went to Portland. So they were in dire need of animators. They were like, oh my God, we need to hire people. So my friend Dan's like, you should go in and test, audition for it, see if you want to do this. And
audition like an actor would audition?
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Here's a puppet, here's a scene, animate it. And wow. I hadn't done anything like that since school. And I hadn't done anything like that professionally. So I went in there, they put me with another animator to kind of oversee me. And I did it for 3 days. I worked on 3 different shots and I got the job. So it was a lot of it was like luck, timing, and a little bit of I had some talent. So but it was for sure something that once I got in there, I it was a boot camp. It was like, I learned a ton, but it was a really hard job and it wasn't without its challenges. But I learned a lot and my work got a lot better. And more importantly, I met some of, I met people on that job that I continue to work with, like, you know, Mark and Seamus and Chris from Screen Novelties were all people I met on that job. My friend Musa Brooker, Sarah DeGodemeyer, Sianuk Mariana. I mean, there's just a ton of people and talented people who were all working there at that time. And they're all people I still work with now. And so as hard as that job was, it was a great job to have as my first job in animation.
That's awesome. So it sounds like it took a little while after graduating for that to happen since you moved to LA first. And I feel like, you know, because the world and society kind of makes us feel like, okay, there's a plan for your life. You graduate high school, you go to college, you graduate, you get an internship, you get a job, you get hired from it, you know, you get married, you have kids, you know, like there's this like path, right? And yeah. So when, at least for me, I will say, like afterwards, when it took a while for me to land somewhere full time, I questioned, like, do I have skills? Like, should I pursue something else? Did that happen for you at all? And if it did, like, how did you manage those feelings?
It definitely was, it was hard. I mean, I was really lucky. I got my job at Celebrity Deathmatch, but that was a difficult job. And I only stayed there for about 14 months. And then I quit and left and went over to Daria. I had a bunch of friends who were working on Daria. They had much nicer supervisors. They had much nicer hours. They were like, they were working 10 to 6. Like Celebrity Deathmatch was 9 to 7. They just seemed to have a very, very chill lifestyle where it was like you got your assignments and, you know, you just had to have them done in a week or two and it was at your pace. So it was just a completely different world. And I had had some difficulties with one of our animation directors on Celebrity Deathmatch. And I was like, I don't want to work on this anymore with this person. I'm going to go over here. So I spent a season on Daria, and then I got an opportunity to go to Los Angeles for 4 or 5 months to work on a job that was called Sweet J Presents. It was a web series that was the precursor to Robot Chicken, and it was being directed by Mark and Seamus, Seamus Walsh and Mark Caballero of Screen Novelties. And they had gotten approached by Seth Green and Matt Sunreich and needed some help to produce this show for Sony. It was really funny. Sony was way ahead of its time in getting into the stream. They were creating a streaming platform called Screen Blast back in 2001. And so this was a show for that. And I went out to California, worked for 4 or 5 months on that project. And it was a ton of fun. It was like really exactly what, like, most of the sketches from that show wound up being in the first season of Robot Chicken. So I worked on that, and that was really great. And then I came back to New York. I worked on the last Daria movie, and that wrapped up in August of 2001. And then September 11th happened, and everything changed. Viacom had merged with CBS earlier that year, and they decided to shut down MTV Animation right before Christmas of 2001. They were like, why are we producing animation in New York in a high-rise building? Like, because MTV Animation was on the 31st floor of a high-rise in Midtown Manhattan. So Celebrity Deathmatch was produced in offices and conference rooms on the 34th floor of a high-rise. After December of 2001, they were like, we're not doing this anymore. They shut it down. So MTV Animation was gone. Nickelodeon was still happening in New York, and Scholastic was still happening. but there was like, there were very few jobs. So the year after 9/11, that whole year of 2001 to 2002, I was taking whatever freelance work I could get. And I was doing lots of random gigs. I was doing photography stuff. I was working for an event planner doing events. I would work, basically, if there was a job, I would take it. I would do retail. I would do whatever in between animation jobs. But it was a full year before I got another animation job because it was so difficult. And the first opportunity I had to do another job was in the summer of 2002. There was a project with the Kyoto Brothers that was a series of interstitials for Playhouse Disney. And it was this character. He was a yellow blob of clay named Clay. And it was the only stop motion job in the entire country at the time. And there were three positions. And they wanted to audition everybody. But in order to audition everybody, you had to fly yourself out, get yourself there, and work for free for 2 days to audition. And I flew out, stayed with friends, auditioned for the job, and was really fortunate that I got the job. I beat out like 35 other people, but I had to be in Los Angeles from New York a week later and basically sublet my apartment in New York, borrow a car, get to LA, and make it work and be there for 6 months. So it was pretty, pretty tumultuous, but I was very happy to have work after not having work for a year.
Yeah, that's so intense. That must have been such an amazing feeling to know that you got it out of like so many other people. But, you know, when I think about the hiring processes in just in general, I'm always like, but I also feel bad I got it when everyone needs work. So
I know.
Wow. It's a lot.
Yeah, it was a bit of an intense job as well. I feel like everything from the early part of my career were all very intense jobs, and like it's gotten more relaxed as I've gone on. But yeah, but like it definitely was something when I'd worked on that for almost 9 months, and then I came back to New York and I picked up some pilot work, and I picked up, you know, I would just find work with people that I had done jobs with before. I did some commercial things. And then if there was stuff in LA, I would, you know, buy myself a ticket and go to Los Angeles and work on a job in Los Angeles.
Did you find that you were kind of like crashing with friends a lot?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. That must have been wild. How do you even make plans, or I don't even know.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those things that I was very fortunate that I had a few friends. I had a few friends who had houses with an extra spare room, so I could come and crash with them. I had like two guy friends of mine that, like, you know, one had a house in Sun Valley, another had a house in Studio City, and I would just kind of bounce between their places. And, you know, and then I had other friends who, you know, were super, super generous to let me stay with them for so long. And
did you, you know, were you kind of their crash pad in New York when they needed to go to?
Yeah. Whenever anybody needed a place to stay. Yeah. Everyone was able to come stay in my place if they needed to be there. Yeah.
So, it's like networking on a whole other level. Yeah. And like, I wanted to ask too, like with all these, you know, sporadic jobs that you were getting, like, it wasn't like something you applied for online, right? It was something you heard about through your network.
Yeah, it was all networked. It was all people, like, it was all people I had worked with before in the past, or people that like had heard about me from someone else. If there was someone I knew here and it was all word of mouth. It was almost never, ever something that I applied for. I don't think I've ever gotten a job through a job listing.
Yeah.
Ever.
Same thing here. Me, like specifically to animation, all my jobs have been through word of mouth, networking.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of it is either people that I went to school with, people that I have worked with in the past, friends of friends. Like I even recently got recommended for a job by someone who was the boyfriend of a woman who I worked with. Like, he's never met me. And he was like, he recommended me because of her recommendation. So it's nice. Like, people are super, you know, if you build up a reputation and you're good at what you do and people trust you, then they pass that on and they want other people to work with you. And that's what I've always tried to do. So I've been really fortunate in that people have been very generous and in, you know, thinking of me for work and recommending me.
Mm-hmm. So when you started, because you're a producer now, so like somewhere along the way you pivoted into, you know, doing more than just animation, like animating, you also became a producer and production coordinator, et cetera. Can you talk about what went into pivoting, or like not even pivoting because you're still animating, but broadening your scope, I guess?
Yeah. So I think it was probably starting, it was actually kind of around 2005, 2006. I had a friend of mine from college who had a show called Family Guy, and he was talking to me one day and how he wanted to do a stop motion sequence in one of the episodes that kind of mimicked the Chevron cars, and I was like, oh, I can do that. He's like, okay, cool. I'll have the producer call you and talk to you about it. So I talked to his producer and kind of put together a budget and did the whole thing, the whole sequence myself. And that was my first experience with actually like producing a segment, which was pretty great because I also went on to get nominated for an Annie Award for character animation on that, which was so pretty cool. Which was like, I was like, yay, that's awesome. But it was a situation where it's like, from the beginning, he was like, this is how long it is. Here's the, and I had to figure out a budget. I had to figure out how to do it. I built everything. I hired some friends to help me with the fabrication and with the, you know, a friend of mine who was a DP and someone to help me with post, and rent space from, I actually came out here and did it in Los Angeles and rented space from Screen Novelties and worked on it for a month. And it was really fun, and I really enjoyed the whole process from start to finish, because when you're working as an animator, you're often kind of like towards the end of the production where all of this work has been done, and by the time you show up, you're just walking onto a stage and there's like a puppet and a set, and you're ready to give your performance, but you don't have any input in anything that happens ahead of that, like to get you to that point. So you can often show up and there can be things that don't work because you're not there at the start of the process to talk to someone who's making the puppet as to what would work better for you to do something. So you're not part of the process. And this was actually really exciting to do that. So I did that for that sequence. And then I did another one the next year. And then I was doing more and more, I was kind of moving away from doing television work at that point in the late, you know, this is like 2007, 2008. I was doing a lot more commercial work in New York because commercial work in New York was picking up. And when I was doing that work, a lot of times I would get brought onto a job and I would have, they would call you and be like, hi, we need an animator. But what they would actually need is they would need somebody to figure out how the animation was going to happen within this whole commercial, because maybe the rest of the commercial was live action. There was only one part of it that was stop motion, and you're coming in and having to figure out how to rig it, how to light it, how to fabricate stuff, how to get everything ready for you. So you were kind of this one man band showing up on a set. Mm. And what was happening more and more is that I then was like, okay, this is not just an animator position. This is also an animation supervisor. Plus, I'm also producing this for you. So I'm producing this whole segment of animation that's separate from the main commercial. So I was taking on more and more responsibilities. I was learning a lot more. And I was getting more jobs where my title was animation supervisor. But what animation supervisor in a lot of is a production role. It's like... Mm. A lot of organization, it's a lot of heavy lifting and figuring out scheduling and figuring out casting and figuring out like interacting with all the different departments. So I started doing more and more and more of that. And then around 2000, 2010, I was doing a lot more animation supervising stuff. And then in 2011, I got offered an opportunity to go work in San Francisco as an animator on Henry Selick's feature, the Cinderbiter feature that is ill-fated. But so I decided I'd like stopped the direction of moving into production and to supervising and moved my entire life to San Francisco, took this job as an animator only for what was supposed to be 3 years and turned into 10 months. So going through that whole experience of committing to what I thought was going to be a long-term job where I was going to focus only on animation and then having the rug pulled out from under me, I kind of decided that I needed to make a change because I just couldn't rely on animation alone.
Thanks for listening to part one of my chat with the wonderful Eileen Kohlhepp. Stay tuned for part two, releasing later this week. If you'd like to learn more about stop motion animation, I teamed up with Casey Folan and Alexis Dupre of Animation Wildcard to create the limited series podcast, Hello Stop Mo. Check it out at animationwildcard.com/HelloStopMo. The Ink and Paint Folk podcast is produced in partnership with Women in Animation, an organization dedicated to advancing women in the field of animation and reaching 50-50 by year 2025. Learn more at womeninanimation.org. Please also check out other great organizations and groups promoting diversity in the industry. Black and Animated, Rise Up Animation, Latinx in Animation, Asian Queens in Animation, and Diverse Tunes. This episode was produced by me, with the magic of the internet from beautiful Burbank, California. Music by Grace Tsai and TV's Kyle, edited by Mae Murphy. All opinions expressed here are our own and do not represent those of our respective employers. Until next time, this has been the Ink and Paint Folk Podcast. Stay colorful.